Chapter 9, Wolf Thought. It had been a long time since Amarok and Joliad had looked forward to this moment when they would see each other again. The moment the wolf took off Kakodaz's uniform, he put aside for the moment all the worries and fears caused by the war between Aramarans and Samoydans. "My darling, for a long time I have waited to see this beautiful body again," Amarok whispered, caressing Joliad's chest, who now stood before him unclothed and unashamed. "I've missed your silvery gray fur," Kako murmured, "and also your wonderful eyes. Your voice, your breath, and your warmth." The wolf smiled, "Let me hug you, darling." Several long kisses and caresses followed the hug, and Kakodaz admitted he was very excited. "I am, too. Let's take it slow. We have all the time in the world now," his friend reassured him. They lay down on the bed and caressed each other very gently. Finally, they could feel each other's body, feel it and caress it. Intimate, at first quiet, later very wild sex followed, during which the two males tried many things with each other. Since Amarok had a camera ready, they captured their second time on video. At first Joliad had some reservations and was not sure if a video would be a good idea, but finally agreed. When they had both relieved themselves, Amarok lay between his friend's legs and looked into his lover's eyes. The blue of innocence. Of the great sea that separated their species. But they were together. Connected. "You're so cute, my little fox. I had to be careful not to come too fast," Amarok remarked, panting. "Oh, that was amazing, Amarok." The fox rejoiced and was hugged tightly by his lover. The latter pressed his body onto Kakodaz's and kissed him on the neck and right shoulder while both breathed heavily and slowly regained their composure. Their fluid soaked their bodies as they smiled very contentedly and finished by rubbing against each other. "That was really incredible, the way you gave me the wild wolf. That was fantastic," Joliad yipped enthusiastically. But Amarok just sighed, whereupon his friend asked him if something was wrong. "Sorry, sweetie, but I can't say much about it right now. I'm still completely drained," laughed the wolf. The males kissed each other very gently and then decided that it was probably time to take a shower. Amarok, along with his fox, walked toward the camera, which was still recording. They looked into the lens together and kissed each other breathlessly before the wolf finished recording and they finally went into the bathroom. There they got under the shower and took their time lathering each other up, kissing, rinsing and drying off. Then they lay down in bed and Joliad realized that there was a perfect view of the romantic sunset through the window at the foot of the bed. "Beautiful," he said as he lay in his wolf's arms, leaning against its strong body. "Oh, yes," the latter confirmed, gently cuddling Joliad's shoulder, who sighed contentedly and placed his hand on Amarok's thigh. "I hope this never ends," the wolf then spoke thoughtfully, nuzzling his head against the fox's shoulder. Kakodaz smiled and said, "It was very nice what we did earlier, and I want much more of it." "Now?" startled Amarok, looking overwhelmed. "No," Kako grinned, "not today, but later. I had my very first multi-orgasm, you know that?" "Yeah, I was a little surprised that that actually worked out, but apparently you also have a lot of," Amarok pondered. "Accumulation?" the fox added, and they both laughed. Then they watched the sunset wordlessly for a while, until the wolf realized that his darling had fallen asleep in his arms. Carefully he put him properly in bed and slowly slipped the covers over him. As he did so, he secretly watched the fox's body and smiled. "You have such a beautiful red-brown fur," he whispered and gave Joliad a very gentle kiss on his nose. At this, the latter moved a little, rubbing his nose sleepily, and the wolf was afraid that he might have accidentally woken him up. But when he realized that this was not the case, he looked at the fox caringly and said, "You are so sweet, my darling. I really hope this never ends." Amarok then quietly got up from the bed again. The sun had now set and the moon was shining through the window, illuminating the room. The wolf walked up to it, looked out for a moment, absorbed, and decided to go outside the door. The marketplace was swept as if empty and no lights were burning in the houses. It was very quiet and only a few crickets could be heard. They were even a little louder than the cool wind that blew along the wolf's body. He had not put on any clothes, because he was finally alone and besides only a few steps away from his house. He sat down on a wooden bench and looked up at the moon, while he folded his hands and whispered what was going through his mind, "Jaja, my goddess, I am glad that you have given me back my sweetheart. I have missed him very much, as he has missed me. I am very, very grateful to you and Samo for bringing us back together. And however you did it, it was great." Now the male had to smile, thinking about the sex they had earlier and that it had all been recorded. "I don't know if you guys are displeased that he and I are, you know, gay. I can only speak for myself, but I love him very much and I never want to lose him again." Amarok felt very sad at the thought of ever losing his boyfriend, so now he had tears in his eyes. "Not like my family. He is my family now. And as you know, we Samoydans do everything for our relatives and if we have to, we die for them." The wolf did not notice that Joliad had stood up again, now standing only 2 steps behind him and listening to his speech. "Samo and Jadya, please let us spend a very nice time together. Joliad is sweet, smart and, how shall I say, sexy. I hope, no I know, that he loves me too, and if he wants, he is welcome to stay here forever. If I have to, I'll go back to Aramaria with him too, just to be with him. I think that's obvious." Now Joliad smiled, unseen by Amarok, for he spoke so sweetly and freely about his feelings for his fox, which pleased him greatly and caused silent tears of emotion. "And one more thing," the wolf continued speaking to the gods. "I want nothing to happen to his family and friends in Aramaria, not to be harmed. They can't help this war. Even though I know you don't want to get involved, I beg you, let the powerful come to their senses, so that my sweet fox and I can live in peace and quiet. No matter where, in Aramaria or Samoyaja. I will serve my queen as long as I must. But when all this is over, we will retire, go to work, study, and live a quiet life. I hope you will help us with this." Amarok lowered his head, sighed, and softly said a final thank you. Then he stood up again and caught sight of Joliad, who was moved to tears. "Honey, what are you doing here? I thought you were already asleep," the male wolf wondered. "That was so beautiful," cried Kako. "Why are you crying? You are so sweet and honest. Come here and take me in your arms, my darling," pleaded the fox as tears ran down his lips. Quickly, the wolf took his boyfriend in his arms and asked in amazement, "How long have you been here?" Joliad calmed down again and said with a smile, "Long enough to know that you and I belong together." The males hugged, squeezed and kissed as Joliad then suggested, "Let's go to sleep now." "Yes," Amarok grinned, and as they walked away, he rested Kakodaz's head on his shoulder. The latter smiled contentedly and remarked, "You really have a kind and pure soul, Amarok. Even the war won't change that. I don't know if I am the right one for you, but you are definitely the right one for me. I've known that for a while, but today it became clear to me once and for all." The wolf also grinned now and confirmed confidently, "If you have heard everything, then you know now, that you are also the right one for me, no matter whether Aramaran or Samoyden, fox or wolf." They went back to the bedroom and lay down in their blankets. Joliad snuggled up to his boyfriend so that they could look into each other's eyes for a while longer, very much in love. Wordlessly and in intimate contentment, they gently stroked each other's heads until first Amarok and then Joliad also fell asleep peacefully. The next morning Amarok was awakened by a knock on his door. Drowsy, he ran to the entrance and opened it. "What is it?" he asked. "A shipment for a Mr. Kakodaz. Does he live here with you?" "That's right. This is his backpack. I'll give it to him already, thank you," the wolf replied. He took the package and went to the kitchen to make breakfast for himself and Joliad. He put the package on the table and turned on the kettle. Amarok arranged a rich breakfast on a tray. There were bun-like pastries topped with cheese and other things, boiled eggs, fruit juice and a drink that looked like coffee. Carefully, the male carried the tray into the bedroom and placed it next to the sleeping fox. "My love. Wake you up," he whispered long-windedly in his boyfriend's ear. The latter blinked wearily, stretched, and when he caught sight of the wolf, he smiled. "You're already awake?" he wondered. "I made us breakfast." "You are so sweet," the fox rejoiced. "Do I deserve this? You ask that after last night?" "Why, hello," joked Amarok. "If not you, then no one, sweetie. Your backpack has arrived. Gotta check it later to make sure everything's still in it. Well, I'll do that, Joliad said, as soon as I finally fall out of bed. He yawned, straightened up, and his boyfriend placed the tray on his thighs before sitting down with him and they ate breakfast together. Then, as they quietly got up, Amarok gave Kakodaz some of his clothes to put on. The wolf was the same size as his friend and picked out some comfortable pants and a shirt for him. Finally, they were dressed, washed, and ready for their first day together in Samoyeja. The male fox opened the package and took out his backpack. He rummaged through it and found that everything seemed to still be there. Wow, you even still have your infocom, marveled Amarok, but Joliad curbed his joy. Unfortunately, these devices only work in Aramaria. Surely you don't have a network connection here, do you? Actually, no. At least our frequencies are usually not compatible. Lately, however, more and more transmitters are being set up in Shutpri, broadcasting on Aramaran frequencies and Samoyedan ones. Let me see if this works, his lover spoke, tapping away on the device. You're building masts that transmit our frequencies? What good is that? My people have been listening to the Aras radio for quite a while, and using an overlay in the same signature, we're deflecting their signals. We're sort of fooling them. Because of the war, his boyfriend added intelligently. It wasn't my idea, the wolf defended himself. The Aras don't know about it yet. After all, they think it's our own signals we're sending out. They also think their messages and info arrive at their destination unaltered. Even though I really don't like this, Joliad began, I won't tell anyone about it. I just hope it all ends soon. Aren't your stations too far from Bolmer? That's where the data is sent from, and that's where it's received. Everything goes through the capital. Not at all. We are only a few steps away from the coast of Samoyeja. We have set up some antennas in Shutpri whose signals definitely reach Bolmer and very far into the area of the Great Sea. That shortens the way for the infocom to radio Bolmer, Amarok explained and his friend understood, then you only need to bridge a part of the sea. Let's see, the wolf mused, while Joliad looked at him admiringly, looking quite absorbed. There we go, Amarok said suddenly. Welcome to the web of Aramaria. You are the best. Rejoiced Kako. So smart and fast. A real hacker. They kissed each other and then Joliad admitted, actually, I was going to call Carteron, but I lost the piece of paper with the contact number. I'll get that, hang on, the wolf spoke, tapping away on the device again, and a moment later said, done. The big boss is in your contact list now, and if you write to him, he won't know the signal is coming from here. With widened eyes, Joliad asked him how he did it, but Amarok only winked and smiled smugly. I mean, it's already a miracle that you can read and understand Aramaran, but this is abnormal. The fox continued to praise. After all, in Samoyeja there are no infocoms. How did you teach yourself to do that? Let's put it this way, his boyfriend began, I learned Aramaran with a couple of dictionaries. Since my parents knew it too, I always had someone to practice with. Besides, our languages are more similar than you might think. Didn't you learn some Ojidani in your basic training? Yes, sure, but only little. I don't know all the words either, unfortunately. But how do you know so much about info? Comms? An acquaintance of our family once gave me a defective device. It could no longer establish a connection to Bolmer. Therefore, it seemed to be safe to give it to me. You can play something with it even without a connection. Little by little, I worked my way into it. And that's without schooling, not bad. Thank you, sweetie. I'll do what I can, Amarok smiled. Then they decided that Joliad should contact Radovan to tell him all that had happened. At this, Joliad showed the wolf the papers he had in his backpack. This is an ID card so you can pass as a citizen of Aramaria, he explained, holding out the plastic card to his partner. We'll have to get a picture of you inserted there later, and you're all set. That means I can go to Aramaria at any time? Even as far as Bolmer? That's right. To be exact, you now have dual citizenship. Not everyone has that either. This is a good thing, Amarok marveled. Yes, now we can go wherever we want, the fox explained, asking what Amarok would think about moving to Aramaria. Forever? However, The latter pressed around. Yeah, why not? Honey, I have to take care of my people here, the wolf explained. If there wasn't a war now. You said someone could represent you. Then just appoint a permanent representative to lead the resistance. This war, too, will pass. Eventually, either Carteron or your queen will relent, Kako said, which got his friend thinking. Finally, the wolf agreed, which visibly pleased Joliad. He gushed about how great everything would be if they lived together forever and what they could do. He was a fox who believed in the good and in the fact that after bad times always come better ones. Besides, we are safe in the western part of Aramaria, no matter how long this war will last. I believe that your people can be content with Chutpri. Do you think Carteron will let go of his racial hatred and give us Jukanat Chutpri? Or best of all, the whole of Banatarija? Laughed Amarok. Well, it probably won't be that easy. But surely we can advise him on a solution and encourage him to think. I mean, the two of us are proof that our people can get along well. It can't be that hard. They all just have to jump over their shadows and finally put the past to rest. If it were that easy. But of course we can try. Why don't you make an appointment for us with him? The wolf asked, and Joliad could hardly contain himself with joy. He quickly took his info comm and tried to contact Carteron. But he was not available, so the Aramaran tried to contact his daughter, Eurimia. She wanted to know where he was and what he was doing, but he skillfully managed not to tell her the truth. While talking to her, Amarok was lost in thought. He imagined the situation he had experienced when a bomb hit his home and took his whole family to their deaths. It was a sunny morning, but actually a day like any other. Amarok and his parents sat together with Enna at the breakfast table and discussed the daily routine, because there was a lot to do. And that meant, everyday life. Lately, the young wolf noticed more and more often that his father was away from home for a longer time on some days. At first he did not know why, but at some point he explained to him that he was the leader of a militant group, which was anxious to represent the interests of Samoyaja and Aramaria and to defend itself against Radovan Carteron. Therefore, he would have to take care of his people as well. Besides, there was no contact with home, with the Samoyedan kingdom, and someone would have to step up whenever necessary. While the wolf family was still sitting together, Amarok suddenly heard a low whistle, which quickly became louder and louder. His father widened his eyes and shouted, "A bomb! Quick, everyone under the table!" Amarok only knew today that there was a loud bang and that at some point he woke up lying among the rubble of his house. The beautiful weather seemed to have faded away and everything around the male wolf was gray, dusty and stuffy. He got up and heard nothing, not even his own voice calling for his parents and grandmother. All he heard was a loud beeping. He held his head and staggered around. The world was shrouded in an opaque, dirty gray as if in a bad dream. It was hard to make out anything, but there, where the table had once stood, lay Jack. The picture that presented itself to Amarok at that time, he had not forgotten until today. The body of his father had been completely riddled with splinters and laid on the ground, covered with dust and blood. The young wolf did not dare to turn him over. At first he could not find his mother and Enna. He shouted and stumbled over some piles of rubble, bleeding from his hands and forehead. As he passed the area of a house wall that was only half standing, he saw a few body parts lying in front of him. The dust settled and Amarok's vision cleared so that he could see his grandmother's torn off, bloody head lying in the grass. He quickly held his hand in front of his muzzle then and retched. He shouted again and again, "No. This can't be happening. Please don't." Wolfish body parts and mangled organs lay scattered all around the house and Amarok slowly realized that Jack, Enna and Amo were dead. He sat down on a wall remnant, lowered his head and cried aloud. He held his bleeding hands in front of his face and sobbed. The gray of his fur had turned a dark red. This could not have happened. They were all dead. Lifeless pieces of meat. How long the wolf had sat there like that and how often he had vomited, he did not know today. Only that at some point he had buried the remains of his relatives right next to the ruin and then went to a hospital. This is how the war began for him, with the loss of his entire family. On that day, he swore revenge on Carteron and all the Aramarans involved in the war. When he later reported to members of the resistance to help them fight, he had to give his name and that of his father, whereupon he was recognized as the son of the leader of the resistance movement. "Amarok," Joliad spoke, snapping the tearful wolf out of his thoughts, What's wrong? Are you not well? What? Everything's fine. Did you say something? He stammered and cleared his throat. I have spoken to Yeremia. We can come by whenever we want. Her father will make time for us, she said. Yes, that's good, agreed the wolf, taking his boyfriend in his arms and kissing him. I was just thinking about Aramaria and that we want to move there. This was not true, but after all, he could not tell Kako the hatred he felt for Carteron, whom Joliad even seemed to like. Yes, and what do you think? Asked the fox. I would suggest that we keep our house. I could sell it, but you never know what the future holds. Amarok, it's your house and your decision. I mean, if you want to secure yourself, I understand. After all, we don't know yet if you even like it in my country. Besides, we haven't been together very long, the fox admitted to his friend. The latter then explained, not that you think I'm securing myself because I don't trust our relationship. I really mean it as I say, it's all ours if you're willing to say we. If we ever want to take a vacation, or if at some point it gets too hot for us in Aramaria, we can come back here. You know? Yes, I agree. Let's go to the troops later and check the current status. I know it's all very boring, but what must be, must be. While we're at it, I might as well appoint a representative for myself, the wolf suggested. Kako Daz nodded and later that day they went back to the shelter where the fox had been treated earlier. Eridoriso and Arachline were standing with some soldiers around a large wooden table on which lay a map of Aramaria. Joliad recognized that parts of the Chut Prejuvenate were shaded and understood that this was how they marked captured territories. Ah, young gentleman! Exclaimed Arachline, and his father bowed. What's new? Asked Amarok, and was then invited to the table by one of the military-clad wolves. Amarok, we have taken the five main towns of Chut Pre. Our people are on the border of Handreli and Nestor. Namely, here. 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 And here, Eridoriso said, tapping the map with a small branch. Okay, that's good, Amarok nodded. But I want these borders to be defended only. No further advance for now. But, young sir, spoke a soldier, this is a unique opportunity, the bridge is almost finished and now we can. What bridge? Interjected Joliad. Amarok, does this Aramaran really need to be there as we speak? Asked Arachlion, and several other wolves nodded in demanding agreement. Yes, he must, for he is my boyfriend. Then Amarok called them to silence. But, young sir, this is about security and these are very important, strategic things, Arachlion was indignant. So what? If it is not enough that Joliad is my boyfriend, then I tell you now that he is my companion. If you want to discuss these things without him, then discuss them without me. He belongs to us now. It is as simple as that. At first, everyone was silent, and after a moment, they continued talking. Sensing that they were grudgingly accepting Amarok's statement, Joliad again interjected, which bridge is ready? Would one of you perhaps speak to me now? We set up these jammers some time ago, also in order not to be exposed to air attack. Then we had the opportunity to build a bridge between Samoyaja and Aramaria, completely undisturbed. We don't need slow ferries anymore, Amarok explained to his lover, grinning. But, he said without understanding, you have almost taken the Jukanat. So what's the use of another bridge back here? Well, you know, young master, we need to create faster options for supplying our troops, Arachlion explained. Wait! Kako shouted, stunned, and the wolves looked at him questioningly. Now I understand. Rado claimed at the time that you wanted the entire Jagrenet for yourselves. And that's obviously true, you're planning a bloody invasion. No, darling, it's not like that. Please listen to me, his wolf friend wanted to explain, but Joliad shook his head and hastily said, No, you want to destroy my kind. I have to get out of here. This is too much for me. Please Joliad, listen to me. His boyfriend was still calling after him when the Aramaran left the shelter and stood in the marketplace again. There he became dizzy and vomited. How could the Samoydans do such a thing? They had what they wanted. Why did they want to overrun Aramaria now? And Amarok supported this? It couldn't be true. A short time later, Joliad had already sat down on the ground and placed his forehead on his knees. His boyfriend came running and calling for him. He sat down next to Kako and wanted to pull him towards him to press him against him, which the fox angrily rejected. "Leave me alone," he grumbled. "Please, Joliad, hear me out," the wolf pleaded. "It's not what you think, believe me."
"Oh yeah, what's it like then?" said Kako tearfully.
"You must know that the gods of old gave us this planet to live on. The foxes have claimed this island for themselves from the beginning, but they had no right to do so," Amarok explained.
"I can't believe what I'm hearing," Kako Daz said quietly, exasperated.
"First Aria tells me that we Aramarans are wolfish to a far greater degree because her stupid son raped her, and then you come and tell me that we are the aggressors.
I'm sorry, Joliad, but you can't go against the truth. Observe your past life, and then tell me how many different kinds of anthropomorphic beings you have ever met outside of Bolmer."
The wolf put his hand on the side of his friend's head and put it on his shoulder. Kako then began to cry silently and thought, he had never met any hybrids other than foxes, with the exception of Amarok and his family. And even to them he was not allowed to go when he wanted.
"What's been going on these past few weeks?" the fox asked, sighing in exasperation.
"It's all so confusing and has changed so much. Everything is going down the drain. My life is one big pile of shit."
His lover seemed to be aware of his pain, because he replied, "I feel the same way, honey. I also don't know why things have changed so much. First you come to visit me and we make love. Then my family is killed and I become the leader of this resistance movement, even though I'm not old enough. Now I'm also officially an Aramaran citizen and all I have to do is leave here. Suddenly we are sitting here and I see you on the ground. That hurts. I don't want you to feel bad. And I don't want to strive against something that means something to you. My queen wants it that way. I want to protect you because you're my family now."
"Ah, Amarok," sighed Kako Daz, turning his head, and they gave each other a kiss, after which the wolf continued speaking.
"Let's go away after visiting Radovan. I want to live in peace, and with you. I love you, Joliad. And I don't want this stupid war to ever come between us again."
The wolf revealed to his boyfriend that he had given up his post as leader to Arachlion. They were now free, no weapons, no uniforms. "We are not to blame for the way things are between our people. Maybe you are right and we can convince your leader to end this war."
"I will convince him. My people are only willing to settle for Chutpri alone if Radovan will leave them alone and return our kidnapped people to us," the wolf explained.
"I don't know what Carteron does with the Samoydans they take.
We'll ask him what that's all about," his fox suggested.
"That sounds like a plan. After that, we stay out of it and live our lives."
Together, Amarok spoke, after which the fox's face brightened again.
"You are wonderful, Amarok. I've told you before, but it's really true, I've never heard a male wolf think and speak like you.
And I've never seen one who takes on everything for his love and even goes to war," the wolf compared.
Kako Daz had calmed down again and spoke resolutely, "I would do it again like that just to not lose you.
Sweet of you. But the time will come when it is made only for us. Never again shall you be exposed to this. I promise you that."
"Let's go," Amarok now rejoiced. "A ferry will take us away. The bridge is not quite finished yet. From TV at Varan, we'll see." His friend nodded as they got up and headed out. Meanwhile, Carteron sat in his headquarters and had the large table set in his reception room. A distinguished visitor was on the agenda, for the Queen of the Samoyeden Empire had requested a meeting with the leader of Aramaria. The leader was dressed in his state visit uniform and paced slowly around the room with his arms folded behind his back. He was thinking, what did Serena want to discuss? Were the wolves going to give up? The servants of the leader briskly laid the table with many dishes and drinks. Of course, Kopaik was not missing. In addition, there was a lot of meat and vegetables. Again and again Radovan observed the hustle and bustle of the subordinates and corrected the look on the plate by moving glasses, plates and cutlery around. He did this as he was somewhat excited and tense. Never before had the rulers of these two hostile nations met. This was a first, and announcements about this were scattered throughout the country via the media. Moreover, because of this, there was a ceasefire on both sides for one day. The first thing to do now was to wait for the outcome of the talks,
because everything now depended on whether Radovan and Serena understood each other well and could come closer with their respective demands. If either of them failed, the war would continue, perhaps even worsen and become more relentless.
Mojabari, your guest is now here, one of his servants spoke and bowed.
Well, let her come. A moment later, a she-wolf approached the fox leader. She was accompanied by two of her subjects and wore a sweeping red dress with a drag. She strode nobly, much as Carteron had imagined a queen would. He watched her movements and smiled smugly. When Serena stood before him, she held out her right hand for the fox to kiss. The leader took it and bowed slightly as he remarked, "Your Majesty, it was obviously an understatement when my servant told me how beautiful you were. He must have forgotten the word stunning. Allow me." Hereafter he gently kissed her hand, but she seemed unimpressed and spoke, "What flattery from a Vulpes, to us, to a she-wolf." Serena spoke in the pluralis majestatis. This way of speaking about oneself was considered natural in Gaja in the Middle Ages. In this country, it also illustrated the speaker's awareness of being someone powerful and worthy. The fox imitated the etiquette to which the wolf queen attached the utmost importance, ran to a chair and turned it to offer the seat to the queen. The lady went to him and sat down nobly after he had correctly pushed the chair under her. Both of them had a very good command of court etiquette, and their counterpart would soon realize that these skills extended not only to behavior but also to language. The companions of the she-wolf let themselves be disarmed by the servants of the Aramaran without resistance and stood from the outside in front of the door, which was now closed. After all, the two rulers had business to discuss and were not to be disturbed.
"Your Majesty, help yourself. We have prepared treasures from both our cultures," the male offered, pointing to the table with a wave of his hand.
"We thank you, Lord Carteron," the fawn said, which gave the fox an irritated smile.
"Lord? Me? You embarrass me, Your Majesty. I am not a lord, but only the leader and regent of Aramaria, a simple man. Not of blue blood. Do not compare a misshapen thistle with a fragrant, beautiful rose such as you are. I beg you.
Roses may be pleasant smelling and beautiful, but they also have thorns, Lord Carteron, don't forget that.
Of course, you are absolutely right. But keep in mind that wild herbs like thistle are very hardy and much more robust. Roses are fastidious and easily die or bend over as soon as the weather gets stormier. I don't like to take care of them, because it's too much work for me," the fox countered sarcastically.
"Let's leave this fuss, Lord Carteron," Serena said then, as servants curtsied and filled their plates and glasses, "and get on with the important things.
Have it your way? For example, let's talk about why you and I are here, surrender terms."
Radovan laughed and choked for a moment. He cleared his throat and saw that the she-wolf had meant this statement seriously, because she didn't seem to be in a joking mood at all.
"You must be joking. You don't seriously think your men can stay in Chutpri for long?" the male asked.
"Of course, we believe in it. Are you aware that you have already lost air sovereignty over this area?"
"That's what they told me. I was not amused. Still, it's only a matter of time before we'll either have ripped out the interfering antennas, overrun the wolves, or leverage the frequencies."
"Oh, you think so?" the fawn asked calmly as she brought a glass to her muzzle.
"I hope the Kopake isn't poisoned," she remarked, earning a bored look from her counterpart.
"But Your Majesty. A poison murder? That would be indelicate. Besides, true males fight face to face with blades.
Poison is more for sexually neglected fawns," the fox taunted, chewing on a piece of meat with relish and self-satisfaction. With his statement, he aimed to offend the queen, who had no consort and, according to rumors, no interest in sex anyway.
"That may be, Lord Carteron. You truly know what you are talking about. I can tell by your taste in art. Nice style you have with the statues in your vestibule. One hears you often take your blade out of its sheath to cross it with those of other, primarily younger, males." This made the Aramaran's face slip. He choked again and took a sip of water. What a counterattack. Serena was a strong woman, yes. But how could she be so quick-witted? She impressed the ruler, but he did not want to praise the she-wolf or make concessions to her.
"Actually," she continued, "your throat should be used to bigger chunks. Or is that not your thing, Lord Carteron?" She immediately followed up, not allowing any time to pass,
but dishing it out. Apparently, she was not only strong and confident, but also brave and articulate.
"All right, that's enough," the male ruled, looking serious, while Serena smiled with satisfaction. Quietly they finished eating and had the servants clear the table. The male fox knew that he had to deal with the queen differently than he had intended. She would insist on Chutpri, not back down. He himself did not want to give away a piece of his kingdom, and on the other hand, he did not want to let the Samoyedan simply leave either. But this, he thought, might be a way to satisfy her.
"Well, after our bumpy start, I'm happy to listen to what your majesty has to say," he commented. Serena sighed and said, "You think there are just a few thousand wolves in your kingdom, but you are wrong. In the meantime, the Jukanat is completely under the control of the Samoyedans, and they are busy replenishing it. Your small naval fleet is not very developed. If we wish, we will take over not only the Jukanat, but the entire Jagrenet with our army. You can be sure that the wolves are hungry, hungry for justice and hungry for revenge for their loved ones that you have kidnapped. You and your subjects are to blame for this. They were tolerated here. If they hadn't kept on breaking out quarrels, everything could have gone on as before. If it hadn't been for the repeated uprisings of this resistance movement, who knows," Radovan said and folded his arms. "This planet belongs to everyone, Lord Carteron. You can't just take it all and imprison your adversaries as you please. What do you want? Why are you here? Do you want the wolves to come home from Chutpri?"
"That would be a start," confirmed the she-wolf.
"Fine. Good, then take them with you. All of them. They can go. I don't want them here anymore. Leave us alone and we'll all go our separate ways from now on. What do you say?" So that was the concession Radovan had to offer her, perhaps to avert something worse. He was not sure if she would accept it, but hoped that she would leave satisfied, without further demands. He was sure he knew the situation in the east quite well. The Samoyedans had taken Jukanat and were entrenched, waiting. What the Aramaran did not know was how many wolf soldiers there were. Perhaps the queen was right and it was possible for them to provide permanent supplies. Then an encirclement to starve them out was out of the question. However, if Serena would give in and agree, she could order the Samoyedans to lay down their arms and all the suffering would be over from now on. Radovan would thus save Aramaria and never let the wolves set foot on this soil again in the future. For a brief moment, Serena thought, triggering a feeling of hope in Carteron for a small moment. "No." She spoke confidently, which startled the fox.
"What, I?
I don't understand," he stammered.
"We are staying. The queen ruled, and if you do not reveal where all the abductees are, the Samoyedan forces will soon reduce your island to rubble until they find them."
"Of that, be certain. Wasn't she planning to agree just now? What is this now?" Carteron asked himself, surprised by this refusal. He pondered, while the she-wolf crossed her arms and waited for his answer.
"So, what do you think?" she asked.
"Well, obviously you don't want to come to an agreement with us. We stand in your doorway with one paw and are told to leave? Take note, our people will be able to travel where they want to go anyway, once we are done with this land. Release the abductees and we can agree that the Banataraja Jagrenet will be enough and the wolves will then leave the foxes satisfied." Radovan now thought, give up one of the Jagrenates, not just one Jukanat. They could not be serious. Aramaria had to continue to consist of seven parts and should belong to the foxes alone, as it had always been. What if he agreed to this and the hated enemy was prowling in the middle of his land? Then there would be more uprisings and they would try to overthrow the autocracy.
"You mean," he interjected, "I'm going to let your entourage run around here and watch them infiltrate our people, genetically mix with them, and eventually want a lot more land. Moreover, they shall not serve you as dictator, but shall continue to serve us as their queen. As I said, all this on the condition that the subjects who have disappeared are released. To bring them back we owe to our people." Now the fox jumped up from his chair and shouted, "You can't be serious. You must think I'm stupid. When the wolves are tired of me, they will stab me, eh? Take Chutpri under my leadership or leave completely. That's the final offer." But the regent remained stubborn and shook her head. She was sure she had the advantage. The Samoyedans would not withdraw from Aramaria that easily. Even if she ordered it, this decision would have been difficult to convey to the people. She, too, had a face, indeed, her title, to lose in the process. Angrily, the male sat down again and opened, "I can't bring your people back to you anyway. They are dead, all of them." The she-wolf was startled and now jumped up herself. "What are you saying? What have you done to them?" "It doesn't matter anymore. As I said, take what I want to give you or leave it." Stunned, the she-wolf breathed quickly and seethed inwardly. She now had her information, but it was not good. She had already feared this, but it was important to her to be able to make a statement to her people about what had happened to all the Samoydans after this trial. She, as the queen, simply had to know. And now she realized that there could be no mercy towards a butcher. There was certainty. A cruel truth. Further hatred. Anger and thirst for revenge. "You cruel butcher. You will pay for this, Lord Carteron," growled Serena, no longer looking distinguished and blue-blooded at all. All etiquette and all form was gone. "I take it that means no, Your Majesty?" asked the Aramaran, knowing full well that was exactly the case. "You still ask that? The negotiations are hereby ended and failed," he got the answer. "Nothing can be done," he replied, standing up and asking his counterpart to leave with a polite gesture. "Come, my dear, I will show you out. Don't you dare touch us," she ruled, "we'll find our way out of your male brothel. Now, now. You forget your form, Your Majesty," Radovan teased, as she first scowled at him and then walked quickly to the exit. She threw open the door and shouted aggressively, "We're leaving. The Lord can apparently only really show balls in front of males."